crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice. Everyone is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice. I don't want no peace. I need equal rights and justice. I need equal rights and justice.
That's reggae legend Peter Tosh with Equal Rights, the title track of his second studio album released in 1977. Tosh, Bunny Wailer, and Bob Marley were the core members of the Wailers. They were a worldwide dominant force in reggae message music. Tosh went solo in 1976 with his Legalize It album, which became a global anthem for the legalization of marijuana. On September the 11th, 1987, Tosh and two house guests were killed and three others wounded in an invasion of his home in Jamaica. The government in 2012 posthumously awarded him the nation's Order of Merit, and a square in Kingston has been named after him. April 20th, has been declared International Peter Tosh Day in recognition of his consciousness-raising music and his activism. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and all week, it's Free Your Mind Week, because the events that have been unfolding require special attention, I think. There's much to discuss about it, and we can't get that done in one fell swoop, in 1 hour, when we have our Free Your Mind Friday open forum. So I thought we'd devote the entire week to an extended version of Free Your Mind Friday, in which we open up the airwaves to you so that you can give us some perspective on the issues as you see them, and we can exchange ideas. We don't have nearly enough space and time to do just that, and this is one of the things I like about radio, and I've always liked about radio, that it affords an immediacy that few other media outlets have. So, you can call 888-874-4888, and let's get started. You may be teamed up with somebody, because the idea is to get used to exchanging points of view, listening very carefully to what the other person is saying. You don't have to agree at all, but we are interested in how you present your views, what backs up your opinion about something, how do you arrive at a particular point or a way of thinking? What was your journey to that point or way of thinking? And if you do that credibly enough, we're good. We're just fine with that. There's no right or wrong, but there's a lot of need to feel comfortable about the idea of occupying intellectual space. We seem to be reluctant in this society to allow people to have intellectual space to just stretch out and share their views. Well, I've been noticing, of course, we can't help but notice the Republican National Convention has begun. It was very, very interesting to just take a look at it. In fact, I looked at it for a couple of moments with the volume off, as I usually do when you have these major conventions and meetings of any type. Before we hear anything coming out of it, I like to look at what we're seeing there, the assembly. Who's there? What is the message given? And just from the look of the room, we got the message. And the message is no different from what it is we have been talking about. Whose political bases, what they are comprised of, who these folks are, what drives them, what is the ideology driving the Trump candidacy. And essentially it was the White Party. It was an almost all-white affair. And the thing is, you have to kind of respect that. I know it sounds bizarre. In other words, Trump is not misrepresenting who he is at all. And people get it. That's why the room looked the way it looked. The arena was a version of America that some people insist this is the real America. And other people say, no, it can't be. We're all about, democracy and we're very accepting of others and all kinds of stuff. When you listen to the speeches and the tones of the speeches, the people who are speaking, the messages they are conveying, and you're seeing one remarkable thing. They are in perfect symmetry with what Donald Trump has built his entire candidacy on. He's not pretending. He's not giving a false notion of who, not just who he is, but what he represents. All that coded language, make America great again, make America safe again, the use of people of color to attack people of color, the idea of a recreation of the segregated 40s and 50s, and that model being the acceptable model and the preferred model of the social order of the United States. These things are in your face. And the odd thing is that we have the exact opposite on the flip side of the coin. When you look at the Clinton campaign, there's a lot of energy poured into creating the illusion of opposite, and there is no opposite there. It's the same thing. And either way, whether you go the Donald Trump route or you go the Hillary Clinton route, the fact is it comes down to the same idea. If you find yourself thinking, well, I'm a member of an oppressed class in this country. This is not my home. They're not talking to me. And they're clear about that. They're not interested in talking to you. Although the vast majority of people in the United States today, I would consider in one form or the other, dealing with economic, social, and other types of oppression. Nobody's talking to them. But lifted before the nation is a series of carefully orchestrated imagery and the propaganda to support that imagery, so that you are lulled into thinking all kinds of things that you shouldn't be trusting any of these people, and yet most of what they're trying to do is to persuade you to trust them. You shouldn't be really casting your fate with any of these folks. They don't deserve that level of trust, that level of confidence. These are, even the polls are saying, these are not well-liked, well-respected people. We looked at the convention, the Republican convention in Cleveland, and it was duly noted. Many of the old line Republican Party just simply were not there. They cannot abide what has happened to their party. This thing has become so raw. It is so crass. It's an invasion. It's a takeover. And they can't deal with this in public. They can't deal with a marauder just coming out of nowhere, trampling everything they've held sacred so far, creating entirely new paradigms of operating, casting to the wind all the things that they've held sacred. And he is not sincere, nor is he intellectually capable of crafting an approach that would work for the United States. Donald Trump doesn't have any clue. And people are not yet even beginning to ask the important question, is this man even sane? Is he psychologically stable? Is Hillary Clinton psychologically qualified to hold any kind of public office? Somebody with such a devotion to lying and deceiving and breaking the rules and lying about breaking the rules, and with such an extraordinary belief in entitlement, who actually is working and profiting from white supremacy, who actually is an agent of it, but has been successful in exploiting the very people who should be on top of this. You know, they should be really clear what Hillary Clinton represents and why they have every reason to distance themselves from this woman. But today I want to talk about the Bernie Sanders and the third party alternative, if there is one, but more so the broader discussion of what does a progressive community do at a time like this? What are the strategic moves, if any, that can be made at this point to our advantage? Is there anything that we should be doing or thinking of doing at this point? Is it too late? What are some of these important pieces of the puzzle that we actually have in our hands and that we can use very strategically to our advantage? 888-874-4888. I'm looking for some keen analysis from you today. What is it that we can do? We know what the Republicans are doing. We know what the Democrats are doing. We know even what some of the third parties are doing. But what is the demand right now? What is the political work right now that should be done? And what should it accomplish? And how should we shape or reshape our ways of thinking and acting? Because it seems to me that we have allowed ourselves, whether by omission or by commission, we have allowed ourselves to be taken advantage of yet again. And we have yielded very hard-won ground and given support, but we are not backing up the demand for the support given. We backed away from this. And so the issue for me is not whether the Republicans and Democrats, you know, the fight essentially comes down to them. That is par for the course. We're looking here about what is the performance of the alternative set. What does it show? We have major weak spots here. And they're showing, but nobody's talking about it. This is the time to talk about it. And this is the time to do something about it. We still have some time to make a point. What is that point, or what are those points? And how do we make those points? What do we have to do? This is the question. Are you up to giving us an answer or some answers, some ideas about this? Because we cannot let this election cycle go through again. We go through the motions again. There is a new president again. And we're back to square one. When do we stop this abusive behavior that reflects the fact that we are learning nothing from our political history? We are learning nothing. But my theory is that there is still some time for extraordinary work to be done that would yield extraordinary effect if people have a mind to do it. But they've got to have a mind to do it. I think, though, the evidence is very, very discomforting this way, that we are showing a level of cowardice that is very disappointing. We're sitting back. We've already given up the fight. We think that, well, it's okay, Bernie made a good try, and, you know, let whatever happens happen. And, you know, maybe we'll get ready for the next presidential cycle. But there are things that can be done right now. Do you have any ideas what those things could be? How do we make the best use of this little window of time, this narrow window of opportunity, to score some really important political points before things are all over and we have to wait another 4 years? What is the work to be done now? What can still be done? Or do we just walk away and say, okay, well, that's the way it worked out. This is how politics works. And we give ourselves all these self-aggrandizing explanations for why we failed at the job. And the job that we have, by the way, that I'm referring to, is to see things through. That's the job. From start to finish, you're responsible. You start it, you finish it. You can't walk away and leave it up to somebody else or leave it to fate. The question is, you have a third party candidate. We have the Green Party, Jill Stein. That's been in play for a while. There are problems with the Green Party. The major problem with the Green Party is that it is not inclusive enough, I don't think. And it hasn't made a very strong effort over the last several years to get into communities that need to hear its message. It is still operating from that perspective that if you're smart, you'll come to the party. The party doesn't have to come to you. If you know what's good for you, you'll just gravitate toward the party. That's not the way you run that's not the way you grow. Plus, another issue with the party is how it arrives at its points of importance. I mean, who's doing the thinking? Who's managing the ideology and the philosophical underpinnings for its political positions? And you see, it's not that much inclusive either. So there's a contradiction, even in the progressive movement. You have people unwilling to get out of the way and take leadership from the people that they say they want to represent. They will say, and it happens over and over again, I've had this fight with a lot of progressive organizations, where there is a natural inclination, it seems, to assume that they're better educated, they're smarter, and they therefore know more than others what should be done. Rather than say, what do you think ought to be done? What are some of the problems that you're experiencing? Rather than eliciting participation, they come from the point of view, I know these things. I want to run, therefore support me. That's an old, tired, useless way to think if you're interested in building a movement. You at least, you know, try to concede to the idea that leadership is given. You don't just stand up there and take it, I'm running. No. You build a movement such that it creates you. You don't create it, it creates you. It is not yours, but you do belong to it. That model has not changed, which is why the good alternatives that could be very, very successful are not growing. And after repeated losses, consecutive losses, you begin to anesthetize your constituency. You begin to numb them. Because they know no matter what you're saying, you're going to lose anyway. At some point, you have to act like you're interested in winning. And that means you have to put together systems that will help you accomplish just that. I don't see how progressive parties that have been around for a long time are still today, comparatively speaking, in the same place that they were when they started in terms of organizational structure and turf one. And the expectation is that this should be okay with you. It doesn't sit well with me. You want to see progress. And progress isn't about new ideas. Progress is about wins that you have bagged. Because this is about winning something. But if we keep going through these endless cycles of presenting people who come up with these wonderful ideas and they think that that's the political victory, then you're again indulging a level of delusion. And you are retarding progress, not assisting it. You're retarding it. And we should hold these movements accountable. I have not seen in all the years that I've been covering the political sphere, I haven't seen a zeal by these parties to really break out and come into communities that desperately need your help and are open to hearing what you have to say. So that is an issue that they have to review. They've got to improve on that because they do have viable ideas, but the ideas are not necessarily congruent with the order of priority and importance that communities place on them. And sometimes they're entirely different from what the political base or your potential political base is saying it needs some help with, it needs a response to. But we get the same kind of offhanded treatment when people are telling you the issue for me, look, a very simple thing. This may sound very odd. The asthma rate in Harlem is astronomical. Just asthma. Okay. Why? It's exposure to all these irritants because of environmental racism for so many years. Now, if a person living in Harlem, born and raised in Harlem, still living in Harlem, raising children now in Harlem, tells you this is a major priority, and you respond by saying, well, yes, I could see that, but I'm for, you know, dealing with climate change. It means you're not interested in what the people are telling you their problems are, that they need help with, that you could help with. And that's a level of arrogance we've encountered with third-party efforts. But this presidential cycle, we know that we saw emerge on the scene Bernie Sanders. Okay. And Bernie Sanders' public utterances, which he says reflected an ideology leaning toward democratic socialism. He's an independent, a registered independent, and basically a Democrat. But okay, he's running and positioning himself as an outside guy. He's not a party hack. And he has some ideas about making some changes in critical areas. Great. So a movement begins. I cautioned folks listening to this program, you know I've said it from the beginning, you got to watch this guy. Because we have seen this happen at least three times before. I shared with you Dr. James Petras' view, which was exactly the same thing. We see these shadow moves being made by people who look like they want to run for office, but they really are serving a whole other purpose. But a whole movement was founded around Bernie Sanders, and it achieved remarkable momentum and significant victories. Now, you can't play down the significance of that. This man got 13 million votes. 13 popular votes. 13 million popular votes. And that does not include the lost primaries in areas that we are sure were rigged. And we had election fraud, rampant election fraud in this election cycle. But nobody wants to, including Sanders, did not raise a fuss about more than 2 million votes in California. So we have this kind of game being played where you look like you're running outside of the political party, but you're an inside man. And you take all of this energy, all of this investment, it now becomes your property so that you can make individual bargains with the Democratic Party power structure that may or may not have a thing to do with the people's needs or the people's vision. You transmute a popular movement into your personal possession. Look, Jesse Jackson did it in 1984 and 1988. I spelled it out for you. When I was editor of a newspaper, a black newspaper, it was the only paper that excoriated Jesse Jackson for it, called him a charlatan. We had Dennis Kucinich do this. We had Barack Obama do this. Running as a stalking horse to give the appearance that, well, you know, we are separate from the Democratic Party, when in fact you're part of the Democratic Party. So he has already genuflected before the Democratic Party. He has already sworn allegiance to it and to the presumptive nominee, Hillary Clinton. So the question is, what are the people doing? These people who felt the burn, what are you doing? What are you doing? What happens to these votes? What should happen to these votes? What could happen with these votes? Is it possible still that this movement can be wrested away from the person who said he was embodying the leadership of this movement? Should those votes be removed from his authority to do anything with, and instead serve as a way of giving birth to an alternative party? This is the question. What do you think? Do you think it is possible at this time, given all we know, given the developments we have seen so far, that Bernie Sanders could publicly be called on the carpet for what I would consider to be a betrayal and called to account for what he is has chosen to do and what he has done with a so-called independent movement and placed it under the aegis of the Democratic Party? This is very serious treachery in the world of politics. You don't do that and get away with it. Why is his movement being quiet about this? I'll take this short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888 right after this. Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And the question today is a little bit discomforting, and it has to do with making Bernie Sanders accountable. Whether there is still time to do that for because of the election cycle, and the Democrats are headed into their convention soon, before the end of the month. And we've seen Bernie Sanders genuflect before Hillary Clinton and embrace her enthusiastically and has by extension embraced the Democratic Party. And all that is good if he was doing this as an individual, but he's doing this as the winner of 13 million plus votes cast with him when he represented that he was part of this revolution, presumably the revolution away from the duopoly, revolution away from the Democratic Party. What do you suggest? From California, Steve, what do you suggest?
Hi, Patrice.
Hello.
I just want to thank you for putting on a great show. I listen very often.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really agree with the thought that Sanders has kind of betrayed his own movement. And he's even taken away time and energy from what could have been directed to toward a more progressive third party. So I'm a bit angry about that.
What could be done, if anything, do you see now?
Well, for now, I know personally, I've just shifted my focus more onto Jill Stein. I believe that, well, she's really an awesome progressive. Gary Null interviewed her, I don't know, about 6 months ago or so, and it was just an amazing interview where she agreed point by point with everything he was saying in his commentaries.
Well, that's one of the reasons she was interviewed by him.
Well, so since I love Gary and I love you, I mean, I was pretty sold at that point, but I was going with the Bernie thing because of his chances to attract a larger, just a larger voter, you know, response.
Okay, so let me ask you: did you think Bernie Sanders was heading genuinely interested in building this revolution?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I've convinced myself, and other people have convinced themselves that yes, he was going toward a genuine revolution, and I think in a certain moderate way he was.
Mm-hmm.
But his ties to the Democratic Party, and his he was even saying that he would support the Democratic nomination way back when. We kind of like put that fact off, you know, and just put more energy into him.
But did the party faithful hold up its end of the bargain? Because it seemed to be the case that the 13 million plus who voted for Bernie Sanders just kind of walked away from the responsibility to safeguard that investment. And it just kind of walked away and left him with an incredible asset, which he has used in the manner that he has chosen to use it. But I have not seen public condemnation of it. I have not seen people raising questions about Bernie Sanders and about the process and about his decision and his capitulation to the Democratic Party.
Yeah, that's odd, isn't it? I don't know. I'm not sure why, but I just feel like people are so put upon these days just to survive and to support their families and their jobs that they were giving Bernie the benefit of leading the charge, but as soon as he kind of passed the staff off, people, I think, are bewildered and a little lost, and mm-hmm. they don't know where to turn.
Well, that's true. I agree with that to some degree. I could see how people could have, you know, they took a really bad blow here. And they may still be reeling from it, but at the same time, there is a finite amount of time to do something. And do you think it is possible to just take back their revolution and find a different way to deal with it, whether it is, let's say, to take it to Jill Stein or to figure out how else to transform this asset as something other than a boost to the Democratic Party?
Well, you know, they're playing the fear card so heavily that whenever I post anything, you know, about Jill Stein or just a brighter future instead of just the status quo, I get called, you know, a naive idiot. I mean, it's the backlash is big, too, on that front. But as you say about the time, it's. I don't know if it's too little, too late, but I think the coming realities, the coming political realities and economic realities, regardless of who gets nominated and elected, will cause more of a rise in a third party eventually.
Yeah, but, you know, here we go. I mean, this is now, and you have 13 million votes. That is nothing to sneeze at, because Hillary Clinton can't win. She just can't win without a boost from someplace. She cannot win within the established political basis of the Democratic Party. She's not going to win there. She's got to get as many different votes as possible from elsewhere to boost her chances of victory. So this is still a very potent asset that Bernie Sanders is shepherding, but he is not, it seems to be, he is no longer accountable to that base that put him in orbit. Yeah.
When I saw him make that kind of capitulation supporting speech with Hillary Clinton, I thought that I was watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers. where is he? You know, who took him? You know, I think we're in a tough spot here because the media, which is totally owned and controlled by the military-industrial prison complex, pharmaceuticals, whatever. They're going to be, I think, pushing probably for Hillary, and people will just kind of go along with it. But who knows? You know what the outcome will be.
But since you're familiar with this political base, are you hearing any rumblings of talk about? Listen, we can't let this thing die. We should do something about it. Is there any discussion as to what to do within that community that has already identified itself as wanting to be someplace else other than the Democratic Party? That presumed place would have been with Sanders and this independent movement. But is there any rumbling about organizing or reorganizing so as to capitalize on an organizational structure that is in place? It delivered 13 million votes.
Yeah, well, you know, my friends are pretty much, you know, taking the fluff off of Bernie and really transferring that attention to Jill Stein. It's real.
Let's see. Time is of the essence. They've got to move fast. And, you know, there are things that are troublesome about Jill Stein and the Green Party to me. But that's just me talking. You know, I think I was hoping that by now the Green Party would have made a stronger effort to have a pronounced presence in communities that are just waiting for somebody to come and talk to them. To build its reach, especially as it pertains to ballot status throughout the United States. There are things as organizational stuff that the Green Party should have accomplished by now and hasn't, and it is hampering its own success, its own political success, that they haven't done these things and achieved these things, I'm troubled by it.
Yeah, no, I agree. There could have been more outreach. It's just that for the last year or two, me and other people have been putting so much attention on an alternative such as Bernie that we could have probably, you know, I kind of almost feel like Bernie was this diversion in a way against the third parties. And we lost a lot of time and effort on that.
Yeah, I understand that, and I hear you loud and clear. Thank you so much, Steve, for your call today.
Thank
Very
you for
informative.
Your show.
Thank you. We go to Chicago. Henry, how are you?
Hey, Therese, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
All right, it's okay. It's hot today, so just trying to deal with the hot weather here. But what you explained, and I mean, you've been explaining it for years now on your show, but the condemnation of Bernie Sanders for his betrayal does not have to stop with him, along with Hillary and along with Barack Obama. We have to make a total condemnation of all three of those people who are, you know, quote unquote, the head of the Democratic Party, which leads to your which leads to your thing of, you know, destroying the Democratic Party. And it has to be done in order for a message to get out to let people know that we're not going to tolerate this. And we make the connection on why these events are happening, you know, because, you know, like you had presented before, and the person who had who you were quoting from, about this is not the first time this has happened. This is not the first time we have, you know, we've been betrayed. You know, Bernie is not the first one. Matter of fact, I think he's, what, the fifth or the sixth one? So we have to make condemnations of all of those people, including the current president of the United States. I mean, there needs to be some sort of voice that tells, you know, that tells these people in the establishment, we're not going to take it no more. And, you know, I agree, whether you don't vote or whether you do what I do, just, write in a vote for myself to let them know that this is not going to be tolerated anymore. And we will not participate in this undemocratic process that they're trying to present to us. Because, you know, the one thing that also needs to be looked at is this primary, the primary that we had just witnessed, is something in political history that we have to study. Because as much as mainstream media tells us how democratic of a society that we have, these primaries have been some of the most undemocratic processes that we've seen probably on the planet Earth. So it's something that like we need to study in our U.S. political history of how undemocratic, you know, these elections were, you know. And I'm pretty sure it's not going to stop with these primaries, and it will continue. But if we do not voice our opinion of dissatisfied voices, then they're going to keep doing this. They're going to keep doing this.
I wonder, Henry, whether it has struck you that, okay, Bernie Sanders got all these votes. I mean, that's a lot of votes.
Yes.
13 million votes. You could do a lot of stuff with 13 million votes. And the number one thing you can do with 13 million votes is completely change the political landscape with 13 million votes. Because here's the thing. As I said early on, your Democratic candidate here is a huge liability. Despite the fact that she was the former First Lady of Arkansas, she was a member of the U.S. Senate, she finessed that, former Secretary of State, former First Lady of the United States, has all these big money donors, has an incredible network. She's got all these things going for her. She's very sympathetically covered in the media, all this stuff. And she still is within only a hair's breadth of losing to Donald Trump, who just popped up the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that she is not the gift that she thinks she is, or that the party thinks she is. She is a very vulnerable, a very undesirable candidate, but she is the party's choice. It means that if a person with that kind of profile could actually still be standing in a rough and tough presidential race, Bernie Sanders could still be standing in this race. Right? So he hasn't, he gave that up. He gave that up. Are you clear as to what the rights of those 13 million people, do they have any rights at all to bring Brother Bernie into line, to publicly pronounce him null and void? What rights do these voters have when their investment unilaterally was taken? I mean, I don't recall Bernie Sanders having some kind of a meeting or a conference call saying, listen, this is where I'm at, and this is what my thinking is. What do you think I ought to do? Recognizing that he was not the revolution, but an agent of it, and therefore had an obligation before making these unilateral moves to consult with the 13 million people who said, hey, you're the guy, we trust you. Do you think that the people themselves have fallen down on their political responsibilities?
Yeah, of course they have, just like with Barack Obama. I mean, you know, when people complain about Obama, it's only our fault because we never held him to task. We never made him accountable. So when I hear black folks talk about Obama hasn't done anything for them, that's because you guys or us haven't held him to task. Because everything he's done wrong, you know, we make an excuse for him. Oh, he's not the president of black America. He's the president of the United States. But yet he's passing laws for every other group of people except for black folks, who, according to the last election, was 94. He had 94% of the black vote. But yet he has done nothing as far as tangible legislation for his constituency. So, you know, just like with the Bernie supporters, it's only their fault if they don't do anything to hold him to task. And, you know, like I said, we're seeing it all over again.
Thanks, Henry, for your very, very thoughtful words today. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Lincoln from New York, what do you think?
Hi, how are you, Ichi?
Fine, thank you.
I would like to say our problem is multifold. And there are answers.
We're getting a feedback, Lincoln. Are you talking on speaker or?
Earphone. Oh, wow.
We're getting a lot of feedback.
Let me see if I could change something.
Okay.
Getting feedback?
Yeah, no, this sounds much better.
Okay. Yeah, our problem is multifold. And a big part of it is miseducation, which is very difficult to correct. And especially if it's coupled with brainwashing.
But, Lincoln, if I could ask you, the issue on the table at the moment, do you think that the people of Bernie's revolution have abrogated their responsibility to call him to task, as Henry just said, to call him to task on not just his capitulation, but the assumption is that he has no further real obligation to account for what he may do between now and the general election?
Well, from the beginning, I never supported Bernie Sanders. And from the beginning, I think if you looked at some of the things he backed, like the overthrow of Gaddafi, etc., showed me that people were in a fervor about him foolishly. And this is what I was talking about, the brainwashing. And there's nothing for them to really back, because if he goes in, first of all, the mere fact that he would throw his hat behind Hillary, and the words, he did the same thing Obama did. Now think about this. In two speeches, and I'm obliquely speaking about Bernie when I refer to Obama. Obama, when he threw his support behind Hillary, he made two speeches, and I marvel that people didn't hear these words. He said, there has never been anyone as qualified for the job of president as Hillary. He said no man or woman, which means that he's saying that he himself was not as qualified as she was, right? And he said that on two occasions. And this is after he and her vied so rigorously for this. And he, in his competing with her, tried to make himself appear more capable and more qualified.
But I want to bring this to the issue at hand, if you don't mind. Is there now, or is the opportunity lost for the constituency mobilized behind Bernie Sanders to lay claim or to regain its claim on the investment it has made and do something, find some way to transform it into some kind of political influence in the current election?
Well, the statistics show that if Bernie ran, that he could have beaten Trump. And I don't like to use those words, beaten, because it's not like a rape. And we end up, when we give these people our votes, we give them power and then we say they won. They didn't win. It was a judgment we cast where we say, okay, we're going to decide that you're the person who should take the helm of the ship. And my answer to you is this. It's not a yes or no answer. The people put themselves behind a false claim and a false hope. So even if they could salvage it and make Bernie run, is what I'm saying to you, the movement is behind a false hope. You see, politics is like religion. And a religion might be erroneous. And you might be support. And so you have millions of people supporting any particular religions which are erroneous. And so the people are imagining that they are behind something good, when in reality they are not. And I'm saying to you, Bernie Sanders have proven that the people's claim was false. And even if he should, we should say, salvage it by making, by saying to him, hey, run, we would still end up being disappointed by him, like many people were by Obama. So I am saying to you, there is really no hope. There's no way, you know. I mean, we need to just forget about that, man, and just learn our lesson and say, hey, you know, we allowed ourselves to be tricked again by another politician, you know what I'm saying?
Politician
is what I meant to say, yeah, you know.
Thank you very much, Lincoln, for your thoughts today.
Yes,
Lincoln, thank you so much for your contribution today and for putting your two cents in this spot. Thank you so much. And that brings us to the end of our program today. Great program. You want to reach me? Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll talk some more tomorrow. Bye-bye.
And justice down in Angola.